about the monsters, spooks, and nasty guys that inhabit your favorite fantasy settings.
We're your hosts.
Hi, I'm Noel, and my favorite kind of people are those who are easily led, see, gullible.
Hi, I'm Colin, and my mouth is specifically evolved to eat only hot dogs.
And today we're talking about the White Reef Flotilla, mein shinio good stuff, and rocks.
We hope that this episode is as wild and amazing as Gull of Earth's Travels.
But first, some news and updates.
I was on Bracket recently again. So if you want to hear me fight it out over what the best fantasy race is.
Oh, wow. One that actually got through.
Yeah. Go check out Bracket Podcast. Just search Bracket. It's the one that's not sports related.
Yeah.
The icon's maroon. Good old fun times.
Real good. Bracket's fun.
I was very, very pleased with what ended up winning.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Look forward to that.
Yes.
Other than that, though, today we are returning to good old fashioned bird folk.
Bird folk. So we are going back to eggs.
Yes.
All right.
Not rabbit eggs, though. Bird eggs.
All right.
We do have a race of bird people in Tauzerg.
We do indeed.
Yeah, they are ocean bound.
Yes.
Which of course means that they are seagull themed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good luck running these guys without shouting mine all day.
Yeah, hence why we did that at the end of last episode.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I figured we'd just run you through, daily life in one of their villages, such as the White Reef Flotilla.
That's a very fancy name.
Yeah, well, there's a reef. It's very white, very heavy in calcium, et cetera, et cetera.
Makes sense.
And in addition to living on it, also they've just kind of marooned a lot of ships on it. A lot of ships float in and out and around it. It's just, a lot of just scrap wood that they kind of build on top of. It makes a good point for a fishing village.
It does. But shouldn't it be called the Purple Reef Flotilla then? They've marooned a bunch of ships on it.
Well, no, then it'd be the Maroon Reef Flotilla. Maroon and purple are not the same things. I will argue this.
Not technically, but they're in the same wheelhouse.
Technically, all colors are in the same wheelhouse.
You get what I'm saying, then?
Well, then why not just call it the Blue Reef Flotilla?
Why not?
Or the Chartreuse Reef Flotilla?
Yes.
Oh my god, you're terrible.
I believe we've established that.
Gull, Tengu, they are adept fishermen.
Yes.
They are a wide-ranging traders by force, if you will.
Absolutely.
They do a lot of thieving, a lot of raiding, that kind of thing.
Oh, certainly.
And they love to fly about and go on adventures and et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, yes. And by adventures, we mean stealing other people's things. So, yeah. Adventures.
Yeah. And the Gull Tengu that happen to be centered around a physical island, they do live, like, most of them are from this specific archipelago.
Yes.
That's in the south. East of Tauzerg,
yes.
Just south of Rockernocker Toggle, near the volcanic lands of the Red Dragon,
mm-hmm.
Just south of the jungles of the Green Dragon, kind of east of the some native lizard folk lands, et cetera, et cetera.
So in general, they're in almost an island of tranquility in a very, very hostile area.
Well, they're kind of in a big pocketed group of islands that are amidst all of this.
So an archipelago of tranquility.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't really call it tranquility because no one likes going there because they're there.
Fair point. Yeah. Fair point.
So probably if you happen to live on more of a substantial island that has some tree growth on it, you might have some actual proper buildings. But
yes.
Most, even ones that do have some land or that most of the cities and towns and villages are going to be boats, wrecked boats, moored boats, et cetera, that are just kind of all around each other and creating a slightly moving at all times a village base.
Mm-hmm. So essentially water world.
Yes.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. Bad as that movie was, I loved it.
Oh, no, don't call water world bad.
Well, I don't know what else to call it.
Good.
Don't make me lie to these people.
If you can like an old Mad Max movie, then you can call Waterworld good, goddammit.
I'll admit, I really did like it.
But yeah,
I think it really just fits in the spirit of seagulls, and especially our seagulls.
Yeah.
Just to live in a giant, slowly floating city made of, well, ruin.
Yeah. And they don't see it like that. You know, they... No. Certainly there is... They don't have a strong sense of permanency. You're not going to have a gull Tengu staking out this one particular rowboat tied to this other rowboat as their house in particular.
Nah.
They're going to rest where they can. Any possessions they have are going to be carried specifically on their person.
Yes. No, honestly, given seagulls, they'll probably forget exactly which boat was theirs anyway.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter.
Which also means that their wealth and resources are largely communal.
Yes.
Which is what makes their treasure ships kind of so surprising.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're bird people.
Yes.
They can fly at range.
Quite so.
But really, you know, you can only fly so far when you're laden down with treasure.
Granted.
So, despite the fact that they are...
Sorry.
So, despite the fact that they are flyers by nature...
Yes.
They do have to do some sailing.
Of course.
Because you gotta go drop your treasure somewhere.
Yes.
And why not have a giant, thick cargo ship just kind of slowly plying around to drop your loot into?
My god.
Yeah. You know, often they'll steal the biggest ships they can find.
Oh, certainly.
And then try and make them bigger. Try and tie together several smaller ships to make a big ship. Or in the rare instance where they can get enough wood off of an island and... an intelligent enough gull to kind of, you know, turn it into a boat. Well, then they've got these big, difficult to necessarily maneuver, but hardy sea craft that they then filled with treasure. Just by sailing them off in the general direction of another civilization, having gulls go off in teams to just raid where they can and bring back loot. And then eventually, you know, these boats get, you know, turned back around towards the archipelago. Or places like, the White Reef Flotilla.
Yes.
And they just get reintegrated back as basically buildings.
Perfect.
Yeah. And gulls will swoop in and grab treasure as they want and bring it back when they get bored of it and et cetera, et cetera.
Certainly.
Take it off to trade it for weapons. You know, it's just kind of, it's kind of like the free parking space in Monopoly or just, you know, if you have a big rainy day fund that you split amongst all your family that just everyone can kind of pull in and you know, put some money in, take money out, that kind of thing.
Certainly. I like that a lot.
A cash box in your MMO guild.
Yes.
You know, just if somebody needs something, then they have a place to go get it from.
Yes. And, you know, actually, to begin with, I was a little iffy on these guys. Wasn't overly fun, but I really like them.
Yeah. I mean, because if you think about it, you know, they largely live, you know, in and among the ocean. They're not going to have much problems getting food.
Yeah.
It's certainly, you know, fishing can be difficult, especially when, you know, varying predators get mixed in.
Yeah.
But there's never a scarcity of food.
Certainly.
So really, you know, things like, you know, equipment, luxuries, that kind of stuff is basically just like... It's not as big of a deal. You don't have people fighting over, you know, rent prices or that kind of thing.
Right, you just have people fighting over leftover fries and pieces of hot dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even that, those are very fleeting fights.
Yeah, certainly.
And because of that, I imagine that the kind of government, if you could call it that, is largely just gulls that are smart enough to understand that if they... ply the horde of their brothers and sisters in a particular direction that everyone can benefit from it.
Exactly. Not necessarily cartography, more like...
Yeah.
Stuff!
Yeah. I mean, because I imagine, let's be real, most gull Tengu are going to be pretty stupid.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And the ones that do, you know, aim, you know, lend themselves towards being smart are probably going to be very, very annoyed by their compatriots.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it takes... even a low level of intelligence to be fed up with mine.
But with a little elbow grease and motivation either to make themselves rich or make their communities richer, they can make that work for everybody. They can they can get a flotilla going, they can get a boat out there, they can do some raids, maybe get them focused enough to, you know, make some organized attacks. Because I'm sure if you really get... I mean, you've seen birds fly in formation before.
Yes.
If you can get them going, they're good.
Yeah.
It's getting them all going is the hard part.
Right.
So, they're definitely raiding the orcs. and raiding the various goblins on the east coast of Talzerg.
Certainly.
They're definitely raiding Rocker Knocker Toggle.
No question.
Yeah. They're definitely raiding the various ships that might try and head southward to try and, I don't know, reach the lizard folk down south. Certainly no one's going near the Red Dragon's Island, but...
No.
And they might make it so far north to impede on, you know, shipping going in and out of crabfolk ports as well.
Mm-hmm.
For the large part, they're mostly just a big reason not to go south.
Yeah, they are. They're more of a force of nature than a people.
Yeah. Yeah. If anything, they're probably the reason that so few people have really pissed off the Green or the Red Dragon to the point where they've gone out into the world.
Yes. So really, they're sort of a peacekeeping force, is what you're saying.
Yes. Just a little bit of chaos to keep things just kind of under wraps a little bit.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, they'll steal some various fabrics and wool and what have you from the orcs to turn into menial clothing or
maybe sails.
Yeah, if they even use those, they probably just put a big rudder on one end of the ship and let it float in a direction.
Yep. Occasionally someone will get brave and get everyone to try flapping in the same direction. It doesn't work, but they try it.
Oh, yeah. But well, why wouldn't they? Because they swear it worked one time.
Yes.
Definitely they're probably using, again, kind of like the crab folk, they're probably using a lot of rock and coral for weapons.
Yes.
I wouldn't imagine them being above using metal weapons. I just don't see them lasting all that long amidst the sea.
Nah, they'd rust. They'd accidentally drop them.
Yeah.
Just that sort of thing.
Probably more as ammunition than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine they would have, like, scrap metal arrowheads and whatnot.
Yeah.
They just take shit off of broken boats.
Yeah. I imagine they'd probably use a lot of slings, actually.
Yes. Definitely. I mean, it's light. It's possibly the lightest weapon in existence.
Yeah.
All you gotta do is carry a small bag of rocks and some leather thong.
It doubles as a pocket.
Yep. It does. It does.
Yeah. And, you know, your treasure doubles as ammunition.
Absolutely.
And after you throw it, you can just go pick it up back up once they're dead.
Yes. See? Now we're thinking like goals.
Yes. Because that's, just because you've thrown it at somebody doesn't mean it's not still yours.
Absolutely.
Possession is 10/10 of the law for goals.
Yes.
That is not to say that once you've thrown someone at someone, another goal goes to pick it up. Yes, they do technically own it, but you also own it because it's yours.
Yes.
And that's, while possession is 10/10 of the law in goal culture, there is certainly a large amount of legal battles. And when someone can become a goal lawyer, it is a very, very lucrative career path.
And also probably highly amusing for anyone on the outside.
Oh, yes. I'm sure there are many kobolds and ratfolk, maybe even a few fey, who've decided to come down to the Goal Isles to ply their way as a lawyer and just make lots and lots of highly condensed money and jewels that they pick out of whatever boats come through.
Absolutely. I don't imagine the goals would be too overly possessive either.
No.
It's just like, well, whatever.
Yeah. I don't care if you take that thing, because that thing's not mine. I want this thing, because this thing is mine.
Yes. And certainly that will have caused one or two cultural faux pas, but nothing they don't remember for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah. I kind of like to think of goals as kinder, but slightly less annoying.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They're not being cute and trying to get away with it.
Yeah.
They're just assholes.
And they're not constantly written... there is no fiction for this as of right now. But I hope we convey the fact that, no one is expecting goals to get away with anything just because they're goals and they're so cute and they're good and they're good aligned. Like, fucking... I would wholly imagine most races to Holslaw slaughter goals at any given point.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it.
At least throw rocks at them until they fly away.
Yes, yes. Not the flying kind of rocks, just actual rocks.
Yeah.
Except that you're throwing them, so they're flying.
Speaking of which, it sounds like we're building goals up as being a kind of impenetrable wall of martial prowess, but that's not really true either.
No, we don't want to misrepresent them.
Yes, they certainly face a lot of challenges and threats where they are.
Their islands are just racked with adversity, or rocked with adversity.
Yeah. First of all, you have all the kobolds from Rocker Knocker Toggle coming to beat them up for trying to steal their stuff.
Yes.
Because if a kobold hates anything, it's having their stuff stolen.
Oh, absolutely. That's their stuff. They built it up. They hoarded it. It's theirs, damn it.
And they remember, too.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. That's the big deal. Because, I mean, after they take their stuff from the gold's just like, eh, all right.
Yeah.
I'll go away.
The gulls probably forget about it or whatever. It just ends up at the bottom of some boat somewhere, but the kobolds remember.
The kobolds always remember.
Yeah. I'm sure you have various sea monsters, sharks.
Oh, certainly.
Squids, octopi, etc., etc.
Megalodons, krakens, especially krakens.
Yeah. Maybe some sahagin down there.
Oh, yeah. I honestly imagine raiding, or not even raiding, but just stealing from gold treasure boats is just super easy. You just cut a hole in the bottom, let it drain out, and you're good.
Yeah.
Half the time, the gulls don't notice it.
Yeah. The big problem is that you can't really make a gull go crazy with some kind of chaos magic, because they're already like that.
That's the truth. This is the absolute truth. They're already nuts.
Yeah.
They're dumb. They're nutsy. They're kind of fun.
Yeah.
Take three steps, they've forgotten everything.
But one of the biggest problems are rocks.
So wait, the kind that they throw?
No.
Oh.
The kind that flies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a rock. Rocks being a giant, and by mean the gargantuan flying predator birds.
Certainly. Rocks being among the biggest creatures in any mythology, biblical or non.
Yeah. And it's not like they're going out there and attacking the gulls, per se.
No.
It's more that they're mistaking gull ships for whales, squids, krakens, etc., etc.
Other things they can eat.
Yeah. Which they then swoop down and try and pick up. And they pull these big, heavy, treasure-laden boats up into the air. And they peck at them for a little bit and realize this isn't tasty at all. And just let them drop back down to the ocean. At which point they break and just everything sinks down to the bottom. And suddenly the seagulls have lost all their hard-earned treasure.
Yes. Thus the origin of Don't Rock the Boat, Baby.
Certainly seagulls are not good swimmers, surprisingly.
Yeah, yeah. They're a bit clumsy,
yeah.
A bit feathery.
They can float, but diving is not a pertinent issue for them.
They can get maybe a foot or two down, and they're just kind of like, wait, what am I doing? So, where did rocks come from?
I thought we were going to do Mind Shiny of Good Stuff
first. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. We're good. Sorry.
So, I imagine that, they have all this treasure, all these trade goods and shinies piled up.
Right.
Are any of them magical?
Oh, absolutely. There's no way they could have that much without some of it being magic.
That's true. I mean, they're raiding, you know, even the kobolds who are known for having magical items.
Especially the kobolds, just due to proximity.
Yeah. So I'm sure they end up with the occasional magical bauble that lands in a gull's possession and not just floating around in someone's storehouse somewhere.
Absolutely. Certainly. For instance, what is called Mind Shiny of Good Stuff.
Oh, yeah, no, I've heard of this. I believe the kobolds refer to it as a ring of extraordinary luck.
Quite so. Which is, by the way, its proper name. However, gulls can't remember all that.
No.
They just put it what it is. It's the shiny that gives you good stuff. And that's exactly what it is. Originally, a ring that would fit around the kobold's horn, meant to be worn as a reward from some patron. It was designed to grant the kobold, or generally the wearer, but usually the kobold, some form of excessive good luck, something to increase their fortune, make them a little richer, a little happier, a little healthier. And that's just what it did, until it got taken.
Yeah.
So, I guess the luck runs out, maybe?
Any good magical item, even a luck-based magical item, occasionally wants to change owners.
True. I don't know why they want to change to gulls, but whatever. Magical items are weird.
Sometimes it just happens.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, a magic item's own personal power or luck just cannot be overcome by a particular feather fiend. Let me start that over. And sometimes, despite power or luck, a magic item does not have enough of either to keep itself out of the hands of a particular feathered fiend who really, really wants it.
Sad but true. It doesn't even get worn right. It's worn around his leg, an anklet.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be like a horn ring, correct?
Yes. Gulls are stupid.
Just the stupidest. But it's, you know, it's not a bad look.
I mean, he rocks it.
Generally, what it just makes them luckier?
Yeah, basically. In mechanical terms, it would probably give, I don't know, a reroll or a small bonus in bargaining with your DM.
Yeah. So, you know, sort of, you know, what you might call an action point or an inspiration point or a fate point or a Benny or whatever.
Or Moxie or whatever.
Yeah, just like, you know, maybe once, twice a session, you just get to look at your DM and be like, are you sure you want that attack to hit me? Or... are you sure I can't have that shiny object?
Especially that last one.
Yes.
And certainly it's likely to come back and bite you in the hind end later. However, avoiding tail feathers getting ruffled is not its thing.
So yeah, I guess we would call this a magic ring by most means.
Yes.
Yeah. Depending on the size and the skinniness of various appendages, it could be an ankle bracelet, a regular bracelet, a bangle,
yep,
what have you, an earring.
Could be a nose ring.
Yeah.
Just whatever you want to make of it.
Yeah.
Every race has a different way to wear it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have your nose to be pulled around like a bull. Sometimes you wear it like Gollum. Whatever.
Yeah, you know, you just keep it in your pocket and just, like, you know, put your finger around it a couple of times. Just feel it a little bit.
Yep.
Stick it on your tooth or a tusk.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Clamp it around your lip sometime. I don't know. How do piercings work?
I don't know. You know, I just realized we haven't described it yet.
We haven't.
Well, for those of you at home, for those of you playing the home game,
yeah,
this particular little bauble is a very pretty little thing. It's very, you know, whereas the One Ring, as we referred to earlier, is a very plain sort of just smooth ring with an inscription on the inside. This is more smooth on the inside with a sort of filigree on the outside.
Yeah.
As, you know, magic items do, it looks how it wants to.
Yeah.
It does whatever it wants. Oftentimes, though, it takes the form of scales on the outside. Sometimes coins. Sometimes feathers. Sometimes just frowny faces. But that's honestly up to you. As the wearer, you can sort of determine what it looks like with the help of your DM.
Okay. I imagine that it's probably unlike a kind of finger ring. You know, it's meant to be worn on the horn of a kobold.
Yes.
It's probably a bit thicker and wider.
Yes.
It might have some nice little kind of, you know... little toothy bits.
Oh,
kind
yeah.
of has filigree around either side.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It'll occasionally look spiky.
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
Yeah. But whatever you try and put it on, it'll size itself to that.
Because magic is great.
And that might be a particular note to whatever Gul Tengu is flying around with it, that maybe the ring really doesn't want to be around there, is it's not sized perfectly to fit the leg of the Gul Tengu. It's still clattering around like some big, thick old, fancy ankle bracelet.
Right. More likely to slip off, more likely to get stolen, whatever. So where exactly does that leave us?
Well, they've got all this treasure. We did mention the treasure gets sunk by rocks.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's time we talked about rocks.
All right.
Rocks are a classic mythological creature and D&D monster.
Yes.
So let's go back to the beginning. What's a rock?
Avoiding the obvious joke, a rock is just a gigantic fucking bird, usually a bird of prey.
Yeah.
It's a literally behemoth-sized bird that picks things up, drops them, and eats them.
Like most paintings or drawings I've seen of a traditional rock... it's an eagle or a falcon or hawk or whatever, and it's so large that it can hold an elephant in its claws, and the elephant looks like a rabbit or a large mouse.
Yes. That is to say, it's huge. Often depicted as sun eclipsing, moon eclipsing, just terrifying to behold.
Yeah. It's generally thought to come from nondescript Arabic word.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also the origin for rook in chess.
Really?
Yes. The etymology behind it is that the term rook for chess, it comes from an Arabic word for castle, which is also very similar to an Arabic word for chariot.
Okay.
And that in the original, or I guess in the Arabic variant of chess, as far as trying to trace chess back to a single game, the rook was called a chariot, And then because the words were similar, it got turned into a tower at some point for English.
All right. This probably bears relation to the word rookery.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Rookeries being towers where you would house birds.
Yes.
Which, again, additionally conflates the meanings of these things.
And sometimes islands where birds would land.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, you know, puffins, penguins, that sort of thing.
Yeah. There are, you know... kind of the idea of the image of a rock is related to old stories of Garuda, where Garuda, you know, would take a bird form and swoop down. There are several stories of I think it's an elephant fighting with a crocodile or something. And they go and they pick the elephant up to either save or kill it and just take it away. And there's also many stories of giant floating mountains being referred to as rocks or as the home of rocks.
Right, so?
Yeah, kind of like in a Fata Morgana kind of sense.
All right, I like that.
Yeah. And I believe you found that rocks tend to, are sometimes attributed to living on a single legendary mountain.
Right. Quite so. It's occasionally referenced that rocks will only land at the top of Mount Kaf in generally Iranian mythologies and such like.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting little tidbit that I have never seen referenced in rock before. And that being a unique little bit really stuck out to me, and I think that's something that could be well incorporated in a lot of games, especially in our setting.
Yeah.
With rocks only landing in one spot. Could make it a quest location. Could make it the location of an important item. You know, could be an egg hunt, like in Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
Good luck.
It could be a thing where, you know, you're having a party... go to a certain location, or they have to pass by a certain location frequently, and it just so happens that that is the roosting ground, the immortal roosting grounds of a rock, and they have to deal with that.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I have noticed, though, is that they're not always described as unkillable or immortal.
Yeah.
Unlike, you know, phoenixes.
Yeah.
Which I tend to conflate with rocks anyhow, as well as thunderbirds, actually.
I do believe thunderbirds are definitely significantly different, but
yes.
Phoenixes, I would believe, are a part of the same kind of mythical imagery, just slightly different.
Yes. It's just all big birds are the same to me.
Yeah. as far as their entrance after that, you know, they get passed around a lot. Marco Polo writes about them, but eventually they make it into Dungeons and Dragons.
As do most things.
Yeah, they originate, like most things, in the original White Box set.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, they're a rock. They're described as chaotic neutral. They're big. They nest in mountains. They nest in mountains. And they like to eat things and like to pick things up and drop them onto the ground.
It sounds like birds.
Yeah. I mean, AD&D, pretty much the same thing. There's a module that introduces a moon rock, which I believe was only done as a pun.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Eventually you get basic Dungeons & Dragons introduces several sizes, small, large, and giant.
All right.
AD&D 2nd Edition basically reprints everything, although you do get some, you know, Dark Sun has some specific rocks. Al-Qadim, of course, would have its own rocks.
Yes.
Al-Qadim being the AD&D 2nd Edition, like, kind of Middle Eastern Indian-themed setting, which is supposedly a very, very good setting, even though I've never been able to get a book for it.
I'll be dead honest, I've never heard about it until right now.
It's one of those things that's considered like an ancient gem that if you're, it's, you have things like Birthright, Birthright being one of the first attempts to have codified kingdom building stuff in a game.
Okay.
That basically are like, oh yeah, that, I remember that being a fun module. I kind of like the idea behind it, but it was like pretty much a trash couple of books.
Gotcha.
And then you have stuff that's kind of, you know, the actual mechanics or writing behind it were so-so, but the idea was, like, so amazing that it's just kind of lived on.
Gotcha.
Things like Planescape and Spelljammer, which were
right.
Honestly not well-written, but, like, such a cool idea
it's,
you know, really sparked people's imaginations.
Yes.
And then you have things like El Kadim, which, due to their niche flavor, never really got a huge following. They never got a book deal or anything like Dragonlance or Forgotten Realms, so they never became the big-time, big old, big boy setting.
Pity that.
From everyone that I listened to talk about it, it sounds like an amazing setting. And I know that 3rd edition Sandstorm Splat books drew from it pretty much nothing since then, but I feel like that might be general uneasiness about covering Middle Eastern culture in America in the past 2 decades.
Yeah. Damn it. Well, I hope it really is good.
Yeah.
And I want to find it someday.
I would love to get my hands on a copy of Elkadim.
It really sounds like a diamond in the rough.
Yeah. A diamond in the rock?
Yes.
Yeah. Then 3rd edition, rock again appears in Monster Manual, and you get a chaos rock, apparently. All right.
I thought they were already chaotic.
Yeah. 4th edition, I can attest, has one single rock in it.
All right.
Yeah. And 5th edition also has one single rock in it.
That's impressive for the amount that they push slings.
Yeah. I mean, they're pretty much played as the same thing. It's a big old eagle.
Yep.
It can pick up elephants.
Yep.
I remember them. I had several different rocks in Magic the Gathering, though, and they were always like kind of depicted as metallic, rocky eagles. Like they had kind of archangel style bladed wings and gems all over their bodies and that kind of thing. They were, you know.
That's pretty rad.
I dug them as a child who played big old red monster decks.
I get that.
Not a good strategy, but whatever.
Do whatever you gotta. But that sounds pretty rad. Yeah. I like that. So if you want to bedazzle your rock, go right ahead.
Yeah, please. I mean, you know, it's a giant eagle. You know, don't just make it a big old eagle. Make it a big old eagle with crazy stuff going on with it.
Oh, yeah.
Have it be like part cloud. Have it be on fire. You know, whatever you want to do.
Or both. Or, you know, a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Feel free to make your phoenixes giant rocks.
Yes. In fact, I encourage it. Because phoenixes are cool as, you know, equal-sized birds. They're even cooler if they're humongous.
Yeah. And if your party tries to take a rock out at range, then have the rock fall and everyone dies.
Absolutely. Brings up the classic question of, is it really, really small or just really big and in perspective?
Yes. I guess that's rocks.
That's rocks. That does rock.
And that's the White Reef Flotilla.
Which is really cool.
And the,
Mine Shiny of Good Stuff.
Yes, Mine Shiny of Good Stuff. As usual, please send us all of your bird magic item or a giant bird or a giant magic item or a giant magic bird questions to creatureculture.tumblr.com/ask.
Yes. Askbox is always open. Anon's always up.
Yep.
And I'm always willing to listen.
On Twitter, Tumblr, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Please drop by Nolbard at Tumblr, at Twitter, at Steam.
Pagetish on Tumblr, on Twitter, on Gmail, you know, whatever.
Yep.
I'm sure if you look hard enough, you can probably find me in Google Messenger for Android.
We're not hard people to find, no. Let's be honest. We're not remote people living in the mountains.
You might be able to find the embarrassing photo my grandma Instagrammed of me from when I was like 5.
Oh my god. Please, if someone finds that, send it to me.
Oh no, I can show it to you right now.
Oh good.
It's good. It's a good picture. It is relevant to our interests.
Oh dear.
I am in a ball pit tube carrying away balls.
Mine?
Yes.
That's beautiful.
Even as a young child, I knew how important orbs were.
Yes. Yes.
You gotta have your balls.
I always loved the ball pits.
Which, in retrospect, we really shouldn't have never gone in a ball pit.
No.
They're cesspools of disease.
Yeah, it's true, but I think I came out better for it. More importantly, I actually came out of it.
How do you think that Gultengu would feel about ball pits?
Oh, it would be a wild party.
I mean, all it takes is...